Fox Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
No. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show. Hour number two. Right before you, right now, getting underway. Week three. I have made it 3 weeks in. Very happy about that. Still surviving, so that's all you could ask for, but particularly in this business. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, make sure you stay tuned for my friend from WVNN. Del Jackson will be with us. We'll probably yell about NASCAR football or something. So that's always a exciting time on the Jeff Poor Show on Mondays. Get into this. So you may be listening to top of the hour news. Nancy Pelosi calling the House to return this week for the quote, Postal Service crisis. Oh, my goodness, a crisis. I mean, I think of crisis like a pandemic or a hurricane. No, folks, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, the Postal Service is in a crisis. No one's getting their mail. This is an oversell. I saw Sean Sullivan this morning on his program. We're talking about the nuance of this and the sorting machines and the ballots and the fine discussion to have. Talk about the merits of whether this is a quote-unquote crisis or not, but it's look at the politics of it. People want the government to do a few things. Build roads, bridges, have police and fire protection. Hey, oh, yeah, maybe you could deliver the mail, too. Do we really need the cowboy poetry in Nevada? Probably not. We can do without the cowboy poetry if we had to. If we had to start looking for places to cut. Well, the Democrats have taken this a step further and decided they're going to make the Postal Service the issue. The Donald Trump is tampering with the post office. How many people have pleasant feelings about waiting in line at the post office or the connotation of the going postal? I mean, we're talking about this from a policy standpoint, but there's this whole cosmetic standpoint of this, that if Pelosi wants to marry the Democrats to the United States Postal Service, that is what it looks like they're attempting to do. The post office is part of the flag-waving patriotism. It's not quite. It'd be like if the person running for governor in Alabama decided they were going to marry themselves to the DMV. How many people walk away from the post office? That was a great experience. I wish I could do that again. Now, this is all in the context of mail-in ballots and all everything of that nature. But you just see the headline, and this is The Hill, 35,385 shares. Doing a lot of traffic here. Pelosi calls for House to return this week over Postal Service crisis. 10,000 comments. Postal Service crisis implies there's something else going on besides we can't do the silly vote-by-mail thing and just mail out millions of ballots to every voter in America if they're on a voter roll. Well, hear what you think of that. 251-343-0106. That's 251-343-0106. Text or call in if you so choose. But I how can you win with that? Do people really think they can, or do Democrats really think they can get people to get on board with this? Why are you voting? Well, I care about the environment. Why are you voting? Well, I believe in limited government. What about you? Well, I'm worried about the direction of our country, debts and deficits. What about you? Well, I want a strong economy. What about you? I want a good experience at the post office. I mean, who is that? Who is this appealing to? And the reason you know this is serious is because Nancy Pelosi, who sat on articles of impeachment for like a month or whatever, that she kind of operates on her own clock. Well, this is big enough to call Congress back from August recess. Because August typically is there's nothing going on in Washington, D.C. If you want to go to Washington, D.C. as a tourist, you could go. All the restaurants are empty. Parking is okay. Congressional staffers are wearing, sandals and shorts. They're not dressed up. it's a slow time typically, particularly in an election year, because you want your members to go home and campaign our whole town halls. And then, you know, whenever we had all those Tea Party, all the Tea Party stuff going on, remember, it was the media couldn't get enough of finding town halls in August to where you had Arlen Specter facing the venom of an angry gassed flag waving Tea Party guy. I mean, that was all during the month of August. So for Nancy Pelosi to call the House back in, this must be pretty serious. At least it's serious, I think, because they really think they can make political hay out of this. I don't know what... this feels desperate. It feels like a Hail Mary. I don't know why you're trying to run some kind of gimmick play here. It feels like a trick play. That you're outmanned and you're outmatched and you got to do something, so let's play Riverboat Gambler, to steal a phrase from Alabama United States Senate Republican nominee Tommy Tuberville. I don't think it works. I think it's a long shot. You know, perhaps there is a there are some people in the United States House of Representatives that really have a true concern about the Postal Service. But this is all smoke and mirrors. This is not going to be tampering with the election. The election will not be decided because the Postal Service couldn't deliver a mail-in ballot. If you really wanted to vote, there's ways to do it. I mean, half these states have early voting. They also have the absentee ballot process. No one is going to be kept from voting because of COVID-19. So why the hubbub? We're going to create an issue. They're creating an issue out of this. Yeah, record man saying Pelosi can call the House back for mail-in ballots, but not for COVID relief. Grant, it's absolutely a popularity stunt. Yeah, it's a publicity stunt. I agree with that. But is that going to be enough? Why would you do this at this moment in time? If you had to look at all the issues that people are really, you know, concerned about, the Postal Service just seems like a stretch to me. And trying to make sense of it, you can't make sense of it. Well, that should tell you what you need to know. If you can't make sense of it, it is just Democrats trying to create an issue. Not that they don't have enough issues to go after Donald Trump over. What is this also the, we're not talking about impeachment a whole lot anymore. Why not hammering for that? But maybe this tells us they see that trying to blame him for coronavirus isn't working either. The American public doesn't like the civil unrest aspects of the defund the police stuff. That's all for the base. We got to find an issue that resonates with middle America, with the moderates, with somebody to shore up that, to shore up the swing states. So those swing states are still up for grabs. Well, everybody uses the Postal Service. I just got to say this, though. How many of these people that are these new members of the USPS cult can even tell you how much a first-class stamp cost? When's the last time, you know, most people buy those forever. You buy a book of them, you don't even think about it. But a lot of people just don't use the mail. They send emails. They don't. We've lost the art of letter writing. It's over. It's one of these things that, you know, it's a antiquated means of communication. People don't do it anymore. Used to be a real, you could write these eloquent letters and thank you notes, but we don't do that as a society as we once had. So people aren't as familiar with the workings of the Postal Service. People aren't waiting by the waiting for the mail, because if you got an overdue bill, well, they're going to probably reach you by phone or by email or something like that. You're not hanging out by the mailbox for a check. There's direct deposit. There's all these other methods out there. But there's the Democrats think this is a winning issue for them, and I can't tell you why. Maybe I'm totally missing it, and maybe it's not an Alabama thing. Maybe it goes beyond Alabama into other corners of the country where the mail is an essential service. And it's not say it's not essential. It is essential, but is it as important as they think it is? No, I do not. And they're going to fight to find some other shiny object to throw out there. Moving right along here, finished up a Lanyap column I'll appear on Wednesday. I'm talking about sports. Ratings are down for the NBA and for Major League Baseball. when it seems counterintuitive. You would think they would be up because no one is at home. I mean, everyone is at home and they need something to watch on television. How many times can you watch Netflix reruns of The Golden Girls or whatever, or Seinfeld, before you go crazy? Well, I'm going to watch some baseball. Well, all of that being said, people aren't tuning in. So that gets me to my next question here. You know, maybe it's not as culturally important as it once was. Maybe it's not as unifying. In Alabama, let's talk about college football. Why is college football so big? You could go back to the 1926 Rose Bowl. It was the first big victory for the South when they defeated University of Washington at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. That was like the only game that was played after the season. Big deal. And I remember my grandfather and my father, all his family, North Carolina, big Alabama fans. They were like, why? Well, you know, that is the powerhouse school of the South. That is the regional powerhouse. We cheer for Dean Smith, the University of North Carolina in basketball, and the University of Alabama, and Paul Bear Bryant in football. And it was like that in other places. Unless you were like a hardcore Tennessee fan or Georgia fan, but for the most part, Alabama was the team of the region. And it was because they had scored these big victories against these quote-unquote Yankee powerhouses, and here we are. They really changed the early 20s, or the 1920s Alabama Crimson Tide really changed that. It was handed down generation, generation, generation. University of Alabama realized we got something here. We're going to put an emphasis on a collegiate football program, and you see it today with Nick Saban. So, but there's other examples of that, throughout the country, the Cubs, the Yankees in baseball, the Redskins or the Cowboys in football, in professional football, that is. But as a society, culture, are we kind of moving away from that? This test right now, what we're seeing, people are willing to do without sports. They're not tuning in. And here's what I think the fear is. If people are willing to tune out and find out they could go do other stuff like hunting fish or on the weekends, as might be the case if they cancel college football, would they come back? And you start losing revenue from this because people just, I'm not really keeping up with it this year. Well, it's COVID-19 or whatever. But that COVID-19 would suggest that people would be at home watching it and be more popular. It's going the other direction, it seems. It seems like things are, people are not as interested in it. And that's got to be on the minds of a lot of these collegiate coaches, these football programs. That, obviously the social justice aspect of it and the kneeling during the national anthem is a big part of that, why people are tuning out. But that's kind of just a symptom that people are learning they could. If tomorrow they stop doing all of that, would you still tune in? You're learning that you can find other things to do to occupy your time and without the need to be in front of a TV at a certain time at 7 p.m. Central Time on a Wednesday night to go watch the Atlanta Braves, and you could go find something else to do, and you become less dependent on it, relying on it to occupy time. That's a problem for these sports leagues, for these college university presidents, I think, when they're making these decisions. Because you miss a year. It's like missing a year of school. How easy is it to get that back going and get that ball back rolling? I don't think it's that easy. But in Alabama, you got to understand the cultural, societal significance of college football. In the SEC, it just means more, right, guys? Does it survive this when people are kind of finding other things to do? Got to take a break. We will return. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Hello, West Virginia coal miner. Let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living. Just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. Coming up in the next segment from WVNN, the one on the Dale Jackson will be with us also in the 11 a.m. hour. Baldwin County Republican Party Chairman Michael Hoyt and State Representative Matt Simpson. So still a lot of show to go. Hopefully you could stay with us. Also, you can reach us 251-343-0106. That's 251-343-0106. Call, text, whatever floats your boat. We got them both. But looking forward to hearing from you, as I say, turning up your voice. Speaking of turning up your voice, so I did something over the weekend. I went to it was a birthday celebration for Congressman Robert Adderholt, 4th Congressional District up in Haleyville. Made the trek up. The only reason I'm mentioning this because I kind of took some back roads to get there. But coming back, I took a state in Florence. Florence, Alabama, the very northwestern corner of the state, and hit up some spots that, you know, there is a straight line. If you draw a straight line from Florence to Mobile, goes down and hugs the Mississippi line. But if you look on Google Maps and you ask, what's the fastest way from Florence, Alabama to Mobile, Alabama, it takes you down through Coleman, Birmingham, and then all the way down 65 to Mobile. Didn't go that way. Took the straight line. Couple of observations there that, you know, not much has changed in the last several decades in some of these places. Lamar County, Pickens County, Choctaw County, and on down Washington County. Stopping in at courthouses, and you know, we don't talk about this a whole lot, but some of these rural courthouses and these Confederate monuments, sons of the Confederate veterans, there's still monuments there. But also, alongside the Civil War monument, there is a World War I monument. There is a Korean War monument. There's a World War II monument. Some of the courthouses have one for all of those wars, and then the Sons of the Confederate Veterans monument. And this push to do away with these monuments, look, I get it, but what I don't get is that they are somehow glorifying the South. They're at worst, they're glorifying people that were fighting for the cause, but those were the family members, the neighbors, the kids of people that lived in the area. So it seems like an overreach in a lot of places to try to make it out that this is promoting the institution of slavery. It just has people at the time that lived in that county, and the county lines have changed as the state's gone through history. It had the people that were killed from the area, the names of the war fallen, the war dead. But it didn't strike me that it was trying to, it wasn't waving the Confederate flag saying the South was going to rise again or anything like that. I've always said this about this Confederate issue. One way or another, I don't think it moves the needle. There are people that feel very passionate about it on both sides, obviously. And we have all kinds of great discussions about it, but is it really the hill to die on? Now, I understand Robert E. Lee on a horse in Richmond, Virginia, and the giant statue. I mean, that maybe is different, but these little tokens of remembrance of the Confederate fallen. I wonder if they're really as political as they're being made out to be. But every little courthouse has one. Some of them have two. I think in Butler, Choctaw, the Choctaw County Courthouse had a couple of them. But as I said, they just these little, the way they honor also World War II Memorial and a Korean War Memorial. And keep in mind, this is a lot of the people that go serve in the military come from rural places. They were Alabama in particular. If you look at the Iraq War and the service in Afghanistan, there is a lot of military service that comes out of this state. So for us to have a problem with it, I kind of wonder. Yeah, let's not buy into the politics of it and just look at everything on a case by case basis, because I think some of those monuments are wholly appropriate. And some aren't. And it's not necessarily remembering history or anything. It is just honoring people that died for a cause, be it a lost cause, but they were still members of the family or whatever. It would be like this, though, that we were, let's say the United States and France had a falling out, and all of those American soldiers buried at Normandy, and the French saying, well, we don't want to glorify the United States of America anymore, and you know, either digging it up or letting it deteriorate or whatever. But we got to consider there are American dead all over the world, and their remains are buried all over the world. So you really need to just kind of keep that the you know, that it's sacred. That we could just do this, and I mean, it's not really worth politicizing. But that's just my takeaway from it. As I said, it wasn't this big, glorious, like, you know, soldier waving his rifle in the air in victory. They just seem very solemn reminders of a time when things weren't the best. And these were people that you know, they worked in the county, they served in the county, they went to school in the county, and then that's all it is. So, anyway, they're still out there, though, by the way. And they don't seem, the only one that seemed like it had a barricade around, and those, like, in Florence, that's been a hot button for the Lauderdale County Commission for some time, and the Black Lives Matter movement. But in the meantime, it hasn't really made its way into our rural counties. The controversy has not made its way there yet. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Maybe this is just a product of a highly politicized time in an election year, and once we get to 2021, however that happens, people will forget about it for the other 4 years till the next presidential election, and it won't be made the political hot button that it is. But other than that, the trip was fantastic, and you see a lot of reminders. This was a very thriving part of Alabama at one time. Needs a lot of help, I think, getting it back, some of these places back on their feet. Some places are doing well, some better than others. Nonetheless, going to take a time out here. We will return. This is the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run in. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Richard Best picking on that red guitar. So get around, now gather around, chill and be down. Well, just get down, chill and get loud. Well, you can be loud, yeah, and be proud. And you can be proud, yeah, and I'll be proud. You will be, because South's gonna do it.
And welcome back to the Jeff Borst Show on FM Talk 106.5. Still come on the program today from over in Baldwin County, the Republican Party chairman over there, Michael Hoyt, joins us. And State Representative Matt Simpson. We'll close out the show with him in studio. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But join us now. I'll introduce my next guest, a former colleague, actually a former boss of mine, the one and only Dale Jackson from WVNN in Huntsville joins us. Dale, how are you this morning?
Just glad that you don't work for me anymore, that's all.
Well, trust me, the feeling is mutual.
Excellent.
Let's get right into it. You're still on the mask crusade. Let's do your show, and you and Ed Henry talking about the mask. I would have to concede this. Maybe, possibly, this is having an impact on the numbers going in a certain direction on COVID-19.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that whether it is the scientific aspect of it, or maybe it's just more social distancing because you're wearing a mask, or whatever the reasoning is, I can't tell you the actual reason, but it doesn't really matter. The numbers are going down. That's good. I think it's important that people are buying in. I think that without a mask mandate, people would still be buying into masks at this point. I think we've seen a lot of that in some states that don't have mask ordinances or mask mandates. So maybe the mandate's not necessary, but I don't see it going away at the end of the month.
There is the inconsistent enforcement of it. You go in some places, the bigger cities primarily, they are wearing the mask. They're doing what they're told. In the rural areas, not quite as much. I went into one place, and they thought I was going to rob it because I had my mask on. So I wonder if that, you know, I guess it makes us feel better to wear a mask, or if it's really working, maybe because the city's had the more traffic, more foot traffic, more personal interaction.
Yeah, I don't know what the issue is. I think, like, in the more densely populated places, I think people are more willing to wear them. I drove down to Sylacauga like 2 weeks ago. I stopped at a rural gas station, and nobody there was wearing a mask, and I was the only one besides the person behind the counter. I don't know what the reasoning is. I just think, you know, it just makes sense for us to want to get this over as quickly as possible. I don't buy into the whole, I'm resisting just because I'm mad about stuff. That to me doesn't do anything for me. You see guys like Mike Slocum, the Alabama Hammer, or is he actually is the DC Hammer, or wherever he is doing his thing now. But he's out there saying, don't wear the mask, you look like sheep. And it just sounds stupid. It just looks like a clown. So I don't know why people are doing that, but, you know, we are hearing some of that nationally and in the state of Alabama, too.
Well, I just see people, well, here's my perspective on it. Yeah, I think it's kind of a dopey thing, but I don't want to fight it anymore. I'm over it. I'm just going to wear the mask, be the good little citizen, and be the sheep that I had to be because I got much more important things going on to deal with.
Yeah, I think that may be true, but, you know, the issue is this. They may be working, they may not be working, the numbers are going down, let's keep doing what we're doing. That's basically it. I mean, the number of cases yesterday was like 400 and something, and we've had like 6 or 7 days, I believe, without below 1,000. I mean, this is, whatever is happening is happening. Let's be happy about that. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of people, oh, it's herd immunity. Okay, congratulations, herd immunity. Good, let's go with that. Well, just whatever it is, let's go down that path and just keep doing what we're doing. And one of the things we're doing is we have a mask ordinance.
I just want to know when do you start rolling back? What does that look like? No one could really give you a good answer to that question, and at least in politics and in government.
I think the answer is when there's a vaccine, and the vaccine is out there. So probably the beginning of 2021, I think we'll probably have mask ordinances until then. And I think what'll be interesting to see how many people wear them forever now. I think you will see masks in your grocery store forever, I think, at some point in time, or for some time, maybe not forever. But I think if next year you walk into a Walmart, a cashier will have a mask on.
Yeah, because just dealing with so many people on a daily basis. It's almost like, this is what they had to do in a lot of Far East Asian countries, you know. That it's just part of life now.
Yep. I think that's where we're at. I think this is going to happen here.
Yeah, it's a shame, but all you could do is just go along and get along with it. Let's move on to COVID-19. Speaking of college football, have you ever seen a more self-defeating cast of characters than the sports media in Alabama really working against the college football season?
Well, I put it this way. It's not just the sports team. It's just the media in general in Alabama outside of talk radio, really. They're anti-Alabama. They are anti-sports. They're anti-anything you like. They hate. They hate you. They despise every single person that does not work in their newsroom. They don't understand why everyone isn't smart like them, and everything they want fails. So that's basically who they are in their lives. That's who they are in their professional lives, and they can't help themselves. I mean, that's just who they are. So it's not a surprise to see that out of the sports media. The biggest surprise is what cowards they showed themselves to be when Nick Saban came out and said we should play college football. Not a single one of them criticized him. They went after Trump for saying the exact same thing, but they couldn't go after Nick Saban. So the next time these cowards tell you that Trump's a dictator or we live in a country where the president can't handle criticism, just know that he takes that criticism. But these clowns in the sports media and elsewhere can't figure out how to criticize Nick Saban for something they're criticizing the president for. It's because they're cowards. That's who they are. So good for them.
Well, they're the sports media guys are like the guys that weren't smart, at least without my experiences in journalism. They were not really smart enough to do politics. So we're going to let you go cover volleyball or something, or intramural or sports or whatever. That's kind of where they are, and they have always sought meaning in their profession rather than just give the box score and writing a blurb. They look for a higher purpose in covering sports journalism, and it's really showing up right now in the way we do sports in the pandemic.
Oh, I put it like this: former athletes and failures. I mean, that's basically what the sports media is made up of, former athletes and failures. And they get into the sports media, and some of them continue to doing the same stuff that they wanted to do all along, and they flame out, crash out, whatever, or even transcend it. Off they go into the political media. Jemele Hill would be a perfect example. She just couldn't stop talking about politics, and eventually ESPN was like, okay, go away. And now she's like this big MSNBC star. I mean, it's just something about the people that want to cover that. They don't really want to do that. They want to use their platforms for social justice and things like that. And in the sports media, really, there's no, like, hey, you have to tell both sides, because, oh, no, we're not talking about politics. We're talking about sports and that the athletes are all super liberal. We're just relaying that they are all super liberal, and that's just what it is. So we don't have to do both sides. But heaven forbid a conservative athlete step up, we'd have to crush that individual.
Well, so, Drew Brees, right?
That's just who they are.
Right, like the Drew Brees not saying that he was gonna, you know, it's fascinating to watch. But what's even more fascinating is public's not buying into this. They're not watching this stuff. Ratings are down for baseball. They're down for the NBA. I think they're up for the NHL, but you got the Canada thing going for that as well. But here in the United States, ratings are you know, with people at home, you would think they would be sitting there watching sports all the time, but they're just not into it.
No, it's not that I disagree with that. I think that at this point in time, there's something to the lack of a crowd that impacts the joy of watching a sport. We'll see if college football has the same impact, if it does actually happen. But I think it changes how you watch the sport. I mean, I think it really does, and it's hard to watch at home by yourself with the inability to kind of get into it. I mean, a guy pops out, and you hear, oh, blank, you know, the expletive. I mean, it's just, the game is different, and it's not as enjoyable.
Yeah, but I mean, like, how many Netflix reruns of Tiger King can you, I mean, you know, what else do you have to watch besides baseball if you're stuck at home or you're not going out like you normally would?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that that experience is more of a laborious watch than sitting down in front of 9 episodes of Tiger King. I mean, it's a labor. It's a labor to sit in front of a baseball game because it's so quiet and just boring. And I think without a crowd, it's worse. And I think that's why people have tuned out. Maybe not the politics so much. The political people in the sports world have already tuned out a long time ago. I'm not going to go see a movie with Alec Baldwin in it, and I'm not going to go watch a basketball game because the league is. I mean, those people are already gone. You've already lost them. So I think it's a hard watch. That's what it is.
Even the basketball, though, I mean, I still go back to what else are you going to watch? But you tune in, and you got the social justice slogans on the back of the uniforms. It just seems like they're trying way too hard.
I am solely a college football, NFL, and the college playoff basketball games, the Sweet 16 and stuff like that. I'll watch that. Other than that, basketball didn't really do anything for me, and surely in this particular time it wouldn't do much for me either. It's just not something I can get into.
The college football ought to be different. Maybe people tune in for that. It just seems like the allegiance there, not necessarily because they're big football fans, but because they're big fans of the said institutions. They're a big Auburn fan or a big Alabama fan, or in your case a University of Florida fan.
Right. No, because if you're in Florida, you pick one of the big schools and you root for them growing up, or you go to one, and that's with you forever. I mean, it just is. You're not. I'm a Cowboys fan, right, in the NFL, but I'm not a Cowboy. I'm a Gator. You know, that I am. I am a Gator. I went to the University of Florida, so that has a different vibe to it, and I think you're right about that. I think there's a different connection to it, and plus, you know, if you don't like the players, well, they'll be gone in 2 years. So it doesn't matter.
Well, tell me this. Once we get crowds back in the stadiums and the experience is back to normal, do things turn around? Do people start watching again?
I think so, more so than they are now. I think that they will eventually get into it, but I think that there's a social aspect to it. Also, you know, you got to remember this. A lot of social aspects have kind of gone away. There's no more, hey, did you see the game last night at the water cooler? That doesn't exist. It's gone. You know, you don't have to watch a game to keep up with what's going on and have those conversations. You know, that's all gone because everyone's working remotely.
So nobody's getting on the Zoom call to talk about the Braves game last night or whatever.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. By the way, the Cubs are doing great at social distancing. I'm a Cubs fan because they are blowing out their division. So, you know, that's how social distancing should work.
Was that like an 8-game spread or something?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty bad. They were up 6.5 last time I checked.
Yeah, so fantastic otherwise. Dale, I guess we're getting some national politics real quick here before we have to let you go. But the polls are tightening for Trump. You've always been a skeptic somewhat of the whole Trump train. You know, from your impartial view right now, where do you see his presidential race?
I think that if it were held today, Biden would probably win, but it won't be held today. I think there is definitely room for Trump to grow here. There's no room for him to go down. I mean, good Lord. I think that what you'll see here is basically the same thing you saw last time. You saw a bunch of people who are looking for a reason not to vote for Donald Trump, and I don't know if Joe Biden is going to provide them with that reason. And plus, you know, I think people are also looking at the way the media handles this kind of stuff, and they know that, look, nobody believes the post office is this revered, wonderful institution. So when we're talking about that, all you look at them and go, I don't believe you. You're a liar, so I don't believe you on anything else. And, you know, they're talking about how he wants to destroy the post office and all this other stuff, and it's like, guys, don't tell me you don't understand what's going on and then expect me to listen to your analysis. It's not going to do it. So I think that the media has shot themselves in the foot. They are pushing, they're destroying their influence every single day. There was a story, I think, or a tweet by the Media Research Council that had like 80-1 negative stories about Trump against Biden. I mean, just you tune all that stuff out. So, like I said, there's plenty that could happen. I think Trump could win. I don't think he does. I hope he does, but I don't think he does. But I think it's possible.
The Postal Service stuff is really strange to me because, you know, it's like you're down and you need some Hail Marys. You need to start running some trick plays. What do we have? What do we see here? Let's go down the list of stuff here. Check. Oh, Postal Service. Did they focus group this and just get a bad sample? It doesn't seem like it's a winning issue.
No, I don't think it's a winning issue either. And I don't know where they came up with the idea that they're going to win with this kind of stuff. But it's just I think it's just death by a thousand cuts. You know, Trump, Russia, post office, all these things are exactly the same story. It's a misinterpretation, a misreading of it intentionally, trying to fire up your dopes on social media to get likes and retweets and stuff like that. Well, the general public goes, really? I mean, this the post office, right? Like the place I had to go and I hate, and it takes forever, and you're telling me that that's key. Oh, and the people yelling about it are standing out in the middle of the road. and they're yelling at each other and saying they can't go to the polls, so they can go stand in the middle. I think most people look at that and go, this is garbage.
I think you're right. Hey, we're about out of time here before I let you go. Tell folks where they can sign up for your 7 Things newsletter and where they can find you on social media.
YellHammerNews.com. Sign up for the 7 Things you should be talking about today. You can get in there, and every single morning I'll send Jeff his show prep, and Jeff will just do his show based off my notes. That's usually how it works. And then you can also fight with me on social media at The Dale Jackson on Twitter and Facebook.
Yes, Dale doesn't just punch down. He punches in all directions. Dale, thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, no problem, man. See
you. That was Dale Jackson from WVNN up in Huntsville. We got to take a break. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. Beautiful babe to squeeze my life in my simple way. Guess you could say I'm living in the big time. Welcome back to the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. This week 3 of the Jeff Porsche Show. Day 1, Monday. Happy Monday morning to everybody. 56 minutes after the hour coming up in the next segment. Chairman of the Baldwin County Republican Party, Michael Hoyt, will be with us. Make sure you stay tuned for that. something over the weekend, Saturday, there was a a congresswoman, well, of the squad, Ayanna Pressley, one of the lesser-known members of the quote-unquote squad, the squad being Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar. These four super progressive, wave of the future, young gun congresswomen, they formed what they called a squad. Well, Congresswoman Pressley from Massachusetts said, get out in the streets and protest civil unrest. Until there's civil unrest in our country, there ought to be civil unrest in the streets. And that is that apparently is appropriate thing to say on television. She says unrest in the streets. She goes on television to say this on MSNBC. Quote, unrest in the streets for as long as there's unrest in our lives. Really, really fanning the flames, I think. But you get away with it on the Democrat side. And I don't think these people out in the streets protesting are, some of them are the ones that are really causing the problems, breaking storefronts, knocking over shoe stores and the sort. They don't seem like they're too worried about marginal tax rates, other than they just want to go smash up something. That's part of it. And look, we could talk about whether that is right or wrong, but it is a problem. It is a problem that needs to be dealt with, and it puts the president in an odd situation because you and I are sitting there. Why don't he just sit in the National Guard? I mean, you don't necessarily want the federal government policing America's streets in that way. And obviously we see what happened in Portland, where they were just protecting the courthouse, and all of a sudden it's Donald Trump's stormtroopers come into Portland to sway election or whatever. I mean, it's just absurdities like that. But Congresswoman Pressley, I just, people aren't going to put up with that. Got to take a time out. We'll return. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Land of light. We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight. Because music row ain't only in Tennessee. So won't you bury me in Dixie?